There are things that we experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in a corner. Flickering of the lights. A disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us. Share your story. Share your evidence. Because this isn't just your story. This is our story. This is Ghost Box Radio.
And this is Ghost Box Radio on AM 950, where every week we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, or just the unusual. My name is Greg Bakken, and thank you very much for joining me today. First of all, happy Mother's Day to everybody. I really just want to wish everybody, whether it's a biological mother, stepmother, someone who's always been there for you, whether they're in Minnesota, Arizona, doesn't really matter where, or in the case of my mom, up in heaven, I just want to say happy Mother's Day. And, you know, I lost my mom coming up on 2 years ago. And I don't think of it with sadness. I think of it with wonderful, wonderful memories, knowing that she is still with me. And I hope that you're all able to celebrate the day and enjoy. And, you know, as we always say, you know, today is Mother's Day, but really it should be every day, right? And hopefully we all follow that along very, very well. You know, the opening music that I had today was called, it was like really hot in the top 100s in 1863 as far as the war music category. It was called Hell on Wabash, and it was the Civil War music. And this iteration was done by the California Consolidated Drum Band. And the reason why I am using some Civil War music today is because back when Discovery Plus started a streaming platform, and I think that was in January or something like that, I found out about this documentary that has fascinated me very, very much ever since. And I've seen this thing so many times now, and I just love it. I love the topic. I love everything to do with it. And I wanted to talk about it more. And it's not strictly paranormal, but it is kind of the ghost of past. And whether or not that this is something that is real, which I think it is, I really wanted to talk about it. And the documentary is called Lost Lincoln. And what it is, it's the kind of the journey of trying to figure out if there's one photo of President Lincoln that was purportedly taken at the Peterson boarding house just after he died. So it's not before he was shot or anything. It was after he died, and it was no one has ever heard of this photo even being taken. And the documentary covers the work that Dr. Whitney Braun had put together to try to figure out if this really could be the last Lincoln photo. And we're going to be talking today with Dr. Whitney Braun, who is an American bioethicist and professor, investigative researcher, and documentary filmmaker who has been featured on the Discovery Channel as the host of this documentary we're talking about, Undiscovered, The Lost Lincoln. She was also the executive producer on it. She has also been featured on NPR and the National Geographic Channel television program Taboo. She has served as contributor for the Huffington Post and been featured in Scientific American. Her major academic work is centered in the field for bioethics and public health and has been published on the Jane Practice of Selicana. She also researches and authenticates antique artifacts and has recently gone back to law school. She has absurd enthusiasm for vintage Airstream travel trailers and unsolved mysteries. Dr. Braun, welcome to Ghost Box Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's our pleasure. I really wanted to talk to you about this. And for anyone who has questions about the history of this photo as we start talking about it, as far as, you know, just where it came from, anything that comes to your mind, please feel free to give us a call. You can call us at 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. You can send an email, comment at am950radio.com. Also, I am streaming on Facebook in studio feed. You can see me on the AM950 page. You can also see me on Paranormal United Network 2, Minnesota Ghost Box, Parafriends. If you want to leave a comment in the Facebook, I am checking those, and we can definitely talk about that too. Now, I don't know if I did a great job explaining what the documentary is, because obviously, first of all, there are 130 known pictures of Lincoln that exist, which, you know, sounds like a lot, but actually it really isn't. And one of them, which I find really fascinating, one of the photos actually has John Wilkes Booth in it also. Which, I mean, people might, who don't know what it is, they might think, I mean, they're like, you know, arms around each other saying hi or something. But no, it's what is it? It's the second inaugural address, a second term address from Lincoln, right? And Booth
and
is just
Booth
up there.
Was a pretty prominent member of Washington society. You know, he was from this big acting dynasty, and he was kind of considered America's kind of matinee idol. Sort of, he was kind of the premier heartthrob of the U.S. at the time, and he is visible in the very far distance up on the balcony, kind of looking down over Lincoln from the steps of the Capitol. During Lincoln's second inaugural address. So it's sort of a, you know, sort of an eerie photo from the standpoint of kind of it being sort of an omen of things to come, you know?
Right. And it just, he's kind of, he literally is kind of hovering over him in a sense. And before, in your documentary, you call out him in the photo, like you show, but even before that, you can see him because he is so distinctive looking. I mean, we're kind of, I'm going off a little bit because that's not even really relevant to the story. I just found it very interesting. The photo itself we're talking about, though, is, let me ask you to explain it, please.
Sure. So the photograph in question that we investigate in the documentary is a mid-1860s era ambrotype. So that's a glass plate image. So, you know, it's an image that has been developed on a sheet of glass, and it's about 2 by 3 inches. It's a little sixth plate, and it depicts, we start this as a scientific journey, and without making assumptions, we just look at it, and it depicts a man who appears to be deceased, reclining on a bed with his eyes open, with this sort of, you know, empty death-like stare. And then the physical features of the man are very Lincoln-esque. I guess that's the best way to describe it. And the story of how the image came into my consciousness and then into the consciousness of the team of people who made this documentary was that someone brought it to us, literally said, I've got a picture of Abraham Lincoln taken. You know, it's the last picture of Abraham Lincoln, which is actually misleading because there was another picture taken of Abraham Lincoln lying in his coffin in the New York Capitol building. But but just so that people understand, you know, it's sort of the last picture,
found,
known to have been taken picture of Lincoln kind of still still on the night of or the morning thereafter of the assassination. And so. So the journey begins with basically taking this picture, which you look at. And for those who have not seen it, I'll just give you, you know, my first impression when I saw it was that it was just the most haunting, creepy kind of, I don't want to necessarily use the word haunting because I don't necessarily want to suggest that, that there's anything wrong with the image, because I don't think there's anything that's inherently wrong or should be apologized for about death. You know, people die, and but it's an image that sticks with you. For weeks after I saw the image, every time I closed my eyes, it was still there, and so I just became obsessed with wanting to know if there was truth to the allegations around this image.
And you know, the thing that I found was a really great way that you described it in the documentary. It's like, this is, say that it is Lincoln, it is him at his most vulnerable. You know, it is a very intimate photo in the sense that it is clearly a man who is dead. And you know, right away, I think the first thing is like, well, it doesn't really look like Lincoln, but it does. And the second thing is, anyone who's seen somebody who you knew and they passed away, they change. They don't look the same. And the lighting on this is pretty harsh.
Yeah. And I think that's why I'm always hesitant to use the word haunting in the sense of like, I don't want to make people think that there's something, you know, inherently shameful or wrong about being seen in your death state. You know, I mean, people, because, you know, I work in healthcare, and we bring in relatives all the time to see their loved ones who have passed. And you're right. They don't look the same, but that's not bad, you know, and it's okay that as we get as we age or illness takes us, we don't look the same. And so, you know, when initially we started working on this project, and there were people who said, oh my gosh, it is Lincoln, you guys can't show this picture because that's so disrespectful to the president's memory, because you're showing him in his weak, vulnerable state. And I really pushed back against that. And I said, no, we're showing him as a human. And that's, you know, he was, and he was a great man who was also human. And this is what happens to all of us. And I don't think there's any shame in that. You know, I don't think there's any shame in the vulnerability of the fact that we do all die.
No. And you know, I'm not going to tell the story because it's really veering off topic, but I just have to say, I remember being younger and being at a funeral at a wake, and the subject came up at the table with the extended family and stuff, and like aunts and uncles and stuff, if for my grandma, wondering if they should take a picture of her in her coffin. And boy, did that turn into a fight in the restaurant. Because
people, well, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut
no,
off. Go
no,
ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say that, I mean, that it does get that emotion out there of whether it's proper or not. But there's people like me, and it's not meant to be gross or anything, but I have this interest in seeing what people look like in different states. I'm interested in it, and I don't think less of them for it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what we tried to address a little bit in the documentary, but just frankly, there was so much to cover. We just didn't have the runtime to put it in. But, you know, it was so common in the 19th century and really up until the early part of the 20th century to photograph your dead loved ones. That mm-hmm. was an entire cottage industry that, because for many people, that might be the only option that they had for remembering their loved one. You know, they may not have had enough money in life to ever get a photograph taken, but when the person died, it was like, okay, here's our last shot to have some memorial, right? Some memorialized version of what they look like. And so, you know, it got exceedingly common to photograph, for example, dead babies, or, you know, which things today, I was just, you know, not too long ago, I was in Mexico City and I was at the Sumaya Museum, which is a big art museum in Mexico City. And they had some photographs in a case, and it was a photograph of some dead, probably 7, 8, 9-year-old twin boys. And the woman that was standing next to me was all in Spanish, but she was basically saying how, oh my gosh, that's so horrible. It's so macabre. Why would anyone do that? That's so disgusting. And I didn't say anything to her at the time, but you know, my thought process was, is if you put yourself in the mindset of someone in 1875 and you've just lost your two sons, that would literally be the only way you could really remember them, you know, was to get a photographer in there to capture an image. And so what seems just incredibly creepy and macabre to us today, in the 19th century, was very, very normal. I mean, we also have to remember the fact that we call it a living room because you would often display your dead loved ones, you know, in the front parlor of your house, because most people died in the home. And now we very much sterilize death. You know, 95% of Americans die in a hospital or hospice setting. You know, it's we're so far removed from death in a manner that's really unprecedented in human history.
Right. What we're going to do, why don't we do this? We're going to take our first break. When we come back, let's get into the mechanics of the lineage of this photo, that how you can actually trace it back to that night that Lincoln passed away. So what we're going to do, we're taking a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more to Dr. Whitney Braun. You are listening to Ghost Box Radio on The Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. And welcome back to Ghost Box Radio on The Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. My name is Greg Bakken. Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is Dr. Whitney Braun, whose Discovery Plus documentary, The Lost Lincoln, looks at what could be the unknown lost deathbed photo of President Lincoln. Like I said at the start of the show, this has been very fascinating for me. It's you know, Dr. Braun, as you said, about how that image kept in your mind. I mean, I have to say, it's kind of been the same thing for me. I've been kind of obsessed with it because it's so many variables to it. How did we get to the point of being able to link it back to the Peterson boarding house in April of 1865?
Sure, it's a fantastic question. And so, basically, the linchpin in this whole story is a guy named George Valentine Rutherford. And so the story that was presented to me when I first saw the image was that the picture had come out of the estate of Margaret Hanks. Mm-hmm. Now, Margaret Hanks, same last name as, you know, Tom Hanks, and a lot, maybe people don't know that, that Tom Hanks is actually distantly related to Abraham Lincoln, but Hanks was Lincoln's mother's family name. And so the fact that it had come out of the estate of Margaret Hanks, like, starts to pique the curiosity. And Margaret Hanks' grandfather, Joseph Hanks, was neighbors and good friends with George Valentine Rutherford. And you might go, well, who the heck was George Valentine Rutherford? Why should I care about that? George Valentine Rutherford was the quartermaster, the officer in the quartermaster corps that was assigned to guard Lincoln's body in the room on the morning of April 15th. So he died about 7:15-ish in the morning, about 7:20 actually, on the morning of April 15th, 1865. And then after he was pronounced, they brought in George Valentine Rutherford, who, Lieutenant Colonel George Valentine Rutherford, who the quartermaster are assigned to take possession and oversee funerals and custody of bodies in the military. And so this is what gets intriguing, is that George Valentine Rutherford had apparently, per the story of Margaret Hanks, obtained this copy of this image taken of Lincoln in that room at that moment. He then brought that copy with him back to Quincy, where he was neighbors and good friends with the Hanks. And then before George Valentine Rutherford moved out to California around 1870, where he was dying, he was going to come out to California to die of tuberculosis in a nicer climate. He handed the image over to the Hanks family, and then it passed from Joseph Hanks to his son, Jacob Hanks, who then had only one daughter, Margaret Hanks, who died in 1986. And then from her possession, it passed into the hands of Larry Davis. And so that's where our kind of research began, was talking to Larry Davis and saying, okay, take us back through every detail that, you know, Margaret Hanks told you, and let's try to put this all together. And there was a name that stuck out. And he said, well, the picture was taken by the Olkey brothers. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is that the Olkey brothers, Henry and Julius Olkey, were the two photographers who rented the room directly above the room where Lincoln died. And that night that Lincoln was shot, they were basically conscripted into service and told, you're going to be orderlies tonight. You're going to run up and down the stairs. We're going to borrow the sheets off your bed. We're going to, you know, you're going to get hot water bottles for us. So they were there. We know that there were two photographers, and we know they took at least two other images of the empty room. So then that begs the question, if we know they had a camera already in the room, why wouldn't they have also just taken one of Lincoln still in the bed?
And that these photos were after the body had been removed, because there's still blood on the pillow, mm-hmm. and they also were hidden for a number of years, right?
Yeah, they don't show up until one shows up in the 60s in the purse of an old lady who was a cousin of the Olkeys. And then the other one shows up at auction in 1985 in New York. So yeah, these two images were kept secret. So again, it begs the question, is if you had a camera in that room, how many other images are there potentially out there that might have been taken during that window of time? And, you know, where are they? And are people out there sitting on them and just not aware?
Now, these photos the two that were found in the 60s and 85, they were paper photos, though, right? They weren't Abrotype, were they?
Yeah, correct. They were paper prints. And so that was initially a point of contention or question for us, is, you know, why would there be different styles?
Right.
You know, the difference being, I mean, this is not something I'm necessarily inherently qualified to speak about, but I'm paraphrasing what we learned from the experts who are qualified, such as, you know, Mark Osterman and Frantz Osterman, who are kind of the preeminent historians of the process of 19th century photography. And in Ambrotype, you know, the theory that Mark Osterman put into my mind was that I asked that question too while we were filming, and I said, but why would you do the Ambrotype? Because the Ambrotype had kind of fallen a little bit out of fashion by 1865. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of been replaced by the tintype, excuse me. But Mark made a really interesting point. He said, well, it's the fastest technique. So if you were trying to get a picture kind of in secret on a time crunch, that would have been the fastest exposure time.
Right. Right.
And so that started to make sense to me that, like, oh, okay, if you had the expertise to be able to take that type of picture, and you're a journalist, you know, you're a photographer whose career it has been dependent on, actually back in Europe, they were portraitists of dead monarchs. Yeah, you would just use the fastest method and try to get that picture and capture that moment.
So why don't we do this? Because I want to take a second break here. When we come back, I want to talk more about how this photo came and how it all works out very well. Also, I want to play some stuff when we get back. Did I capture the voice of President Lincoln and Mrs. Mary Todd Lincoln in a spirit box session last week, getting ready for this show? We got some stuff. I think it's really interesting. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk more to Dr. Whitney Braun when we come back. You are listening to Ghost Box Radio on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. Last week on my show, we chatted a little bit about the paranormal, and we talked a little bit about the coexistence of paranormal and the metaphysical and how they work very, very much together. And I had people ask me afterwards to expand on that. And so in an upcoming episode soon, we're going to have the folks from the metaphysical store, Collective Dimensions, which is located in Crystal, Minnesota. We're going to have them on talking a little bit about it. And I would just say, you know, go to their website, www.collectivedimensions.com. And you're going to see that not only do they sell a wide range of metaphysical quality products like candles, pendulums, crystals, but they also offer services like Reiki sessions, walk-in readings and healings, and offer a lot of helpful, amazing classes tailored to develop psychic abilities, empath skills, tarot and oracle card readings, and so much more. I mean, that's just a few of the many things that they offer over there. Plus, they're really good people, and I've really enjoyed having some conversations with them recently. So check out their site, www.collectivedimensions.com, and see what works for you. And I hope to have Nikki and Carl on at some point to talk about their shop, but also the power of healing and all the metaphysical side to everything, because it's all connected. And I think it's going to be a great conversation. Plus, I need to get over there like ASAP and get myself a new pendulum. So I'm hoping to go over there maybe this week or so and check them out. So yeah, go over to Collective Dimensions. Also, every Sunday night, don't forget, I do my on my Facebook profile page and on my Ghost Box Radio Facebook page, I do my weekly Spirit Box session. And what we try to do is we try to reach out to loved ones who have passed. We've had a lot of really great pieces of communication from it. And last week, when I did this, I started off, I don't normally try to do this. I don't normally try to reach famous people, because that seems a bit passe in some ways, because it's like that's what everyone wants to do. But knowing that I was going to have Dr. Whitney Braun on, and I'm so focused on this photo that I started off the show and I was just like, you know, we're going to try to reach out to President Lincoln, and we're also going to try to reach out to Mary Todd Lincoln. And even before the show started, you know, you kind of have to do your sort of get yourself ready for it, meditate a little bit. And when I asked that question before the show started, my flashlight was going off and answering the questions. Now, some people don't think that that's valid paranormal activity. I tend to, because it was working with my questions. And I was asking President Lincoln, could you please come through? And it would come in saying yes, asking if I could talk, if I have permission to talk to Mary Todd. Permission came through. So I'm going to play three clips here. And Patrick, I think maybe we play them twice in a row, if that works. And the first one is, I have the image. I had the image of that came to Dr. Braun's direction. I had it on screen, and I asked President Lincoln if this was him. Now, I normally you'd let people try to figure out what they say yourself. We don't have the time for that. I'm going to say, I believe he said, sure. So let's take a listen to that. That's Lincoln number one, Patrick.
President Lincoln, I have one question for you. As you can see, I am looking at this right now. Could you please draw your attention to here? I would like to know if this is you. If it is you, could you just say yes, please?
Sure.
President Lincoln, I have one question for you. As you can see, I am looking at this right now. Could you please draw your attention to here? I would like to know if this is you. If it is you, could you just say yes, please?
Sure.
So, I mean, that's really interesting. That's I find that to be really interesting. And before I even said to people, my gosh, I think it said, sure, my comment section was lighting up. Like, people heard it. They're just like, oh, my gosh, wow. You know, so the next one is, like I said, I wanted to get permission to talk to Mrs. Lincoln. I did not assume that I could, but I wanted to talk to her because we know that she was very much into speaking with spirits. So the next one is me asking to talk to Mrs. Lincoln. And what I believe at the end of this is a male saying, Mary Todd. So let's play Mary Todd, Patrick.
Mr. President, is your wife here? Could we speak with your wife? Mr. President, is your wife here? Could we speak with your wife?
So, I mean, actually, it sounds like it'd be female. But what the one that really got me, the one that I just think is absolutely incredible, is I bumble my way through. And I do mean bumble, because by the time the energy was big there, I didn't know what to really, I mean, it was just like, I didn't know what was going on. It was just like, wow, this could really be them. So you're going to hear me ask Mary Todd Lincoln, you spoke with spirits, you know, when you're alive, now that you are a spirit, do you speak with the living? You know, and that's an eloquent way of saying it compared to how you're going to hear it. And the what we get back is a woman saying, talk about what? And that's pretty incredible. So, Patrick, let's do talk about what?
Mrs. Lincoln, you spent your entire life reaching out to us, reaching out to spirits. Do you talk to other people? Do you talk to other people as a spirit, to other living people?
Talk about what?
Mrs. Lincoln, you spent your entire life reaching out to us, reaching out to spirits. Do you talk to other people? Do you talk to other people as a spirit, to other living people?
Talk about what?
So, and then don't ignore the fact that during that, a male says, I'm out, which I don't know what that means. So, Dr. Braun, I guess what you got to learn from this is, why did you waste your money doing all this research when you could have just come to me, you know, and I could have just turned on a spirit box and it would have been... There you go. You know, it could have saved you. Could have saved you like a lot of time. It could have been a 5-minute documentary is what I'm saying here.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I think that, you know, we those of us who saw the image felt that we owed it to, you know, to history in the abstract sense of trying to get at the truth of this image and wanting to know, you know, is this what it's purported to be? And so the only way that you can do that is really to mix the historical research with the science, and then, you know, you take the preponderance of evidence, and then you make the call. And I think the thing that I always try to point out is there's a lot of detractors, right? There are a lot of people who say that this picture just can't be, and they've got various reasons for saying that. And the thing that I always say in response is kind of borrowing from the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche: I can't prove the existence of God, but I can't say God doesn't exist.
Right.
Right. I can't 100% say that this is Lincoln, but I can't prove that it's not. And so basically going into this research, there was nothing that told us this couldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, So there was a plausible explanation for the age and type of photographic method. There was a plausible explanation for why he looks the way he does in the picture. There's a plausible explanation for why the picture ended up in a steamer trunk in a hoarder's house in Quincy, Illinois. I mean, there's a plausible explanation for all these things. So we couldn't find anything that was like, you know, a nail in the coffin, no pun intended, that said this can't be. So when you take all of this evidence, this preponderance of evidence, we can say, I can't prove that it is Lincoln, but I absolutely cannot prove that it's not. And so that's, you know, that was just, it was sort of like a addiction trying to chase down the next piece of evidence, trying to say, hey, is there anything that would prove that this isn't correct? And in fact, it kind of went the other direction for us, where we kept actually finding more evidence was in support than was against. And yeah, that was, and it was, and as much as it is flattering to have people say, you know, ask me my opinion on the picture, it was really truly a team effort. I mean, it took an army of people to research this.
This photo had a lot of avenues to show that that the provenance would fall apart. I mean, the way it was in the documentary, it was literally like a house of cards. If one thing didn't work out, the entire thing would fall apart, because if you couldn't trace it back to 1865 as it had, you know, that's the case. And I think the thing that we kind of gloss over here, because we just don't have a lot of time, you got to see the documentary, is that the history part is one part of it, but you're also going to places that can try to help verify the different avenues of whether or not you can match this to existing Lincoln photos, as far as like having people look and see if face characteristics match, or going to and getting a digital kind of a screen of the face to see if it matches who it matches in a database. And that's stuff that kind of goes above and beyond. I mean, it doesn't in your case, because that's what you have to do. But when you're watching it, to me, it really gives a sort of like, you're really trying to create the full picture. You're asking a question, you answer it, but then it becomes another question that now you need to follow up.
Well, there's another piece of evidence that didn't make it to the final cut of the documentary that was something that really plagued me for a long time, is that looking at the image, you know, a lot of the detractors of the image said, well, they removed his shirt when they were administering, you know, medical care to him, and this man's wearing a clean shirt. And one time I was standing there staring at the picture, and we were driving around while we were filming the documentary and afterwards, and I said, you know what? That picture looks like an old-timey nightshirt. It looks like every time, you know, you see a production of a Christmas Carol with Charles, you know, Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, there's always Ebenezer Scrooge in that old Victorian white dress shirt or nightshirt. And I said that, and then about 2 days later, we were filming with the Olkey descendants, Carrie and Olga Weiss, who are nicest people. And we didn't put this in the doc; we just didn't have time because it's not definitive. But Olga Weiss said, "Well, the story in the family was always that that Henry and Julius loaned Lincoln the night clothes, because after they removed his shirt, they didn't want him to be undressed, so they put his nightshirt on him."
Wow.
That was never written down anywhere. That was just a story within their family. And they showed us some old journals and stuff where they, you know, had written that down. And so is that definitive proof of anything? No, right? It's not. But it just, again, brings us back to the thing is, can I prove it is Lincoln? I can't, but I can't find something that says it's not.
And I find it also interesting that she was very much like, we've always thought that there was something else that they're hiding, you know, about that period of time, about those pictures that maybe, you know, and not in a negative way. It's just like, we thought that there was more to it, especially once those other two photos came to light of the room.
Well, what's also interesting, it also didn't make the documentary, is when we were going through their personal family collection of their images, they had a portrait taken the same week of the assassination of Salmon P. Chase and several other cabinet members that are then those are the individuals that are sketched in the official drawings that went out in the newspapers of who was present at the death of Lincoln.
Wow.
So it's just, you know, does any of this definitively prove? No, but it certainly doesn't hurt. Right. It doesn't hurt the case. And so it was just that kind of, you know, preponderance of evidence that just kind of kept building and building and building, just kind of, you know, kept spurring us on.
Amazing.
And couldn't really stop. And I think for me, I think one of the most exciting moments actually in all of the research was when Carrie Weiss told me, oh, well, Henry and Julius started their career by painting the picture of the dead princess, you know, and it was like, oh, okay, you know,
absolutely.
Now, you know, it's starting to make more sense. And then Stanley Burns at one point had said, well, Europeans would always photograph with the eyes open. And so you have these Prussian photographers who start their career as postmortem portraitists, who got conscripted just through happenstance into being the guys cleaning up the room after Lincoln dies. And you're telling me that, I mean, just put it in the context of today. If two journalists had cameras in the room and a politician was dead, that they wouldn't take a picture?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. So why don't we do this?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, why don't we take our final break here, and then we'll just finish up here. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this. There's just so many aspects to this. It's just so hard to get it in within 1 hour. So we're going to come back, talk more with Dr. Whitney Braun about the deathbed photo of President Lincoln. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. And join us next week on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken as we see the return of psychic medium tarot card reader Ane. Here's the fun thing. She's going to be in studio with me next Sunday. And as usual, you can call in, get your one question readings. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's always good. And we're returning now for our final segment with Dr. Whitney Braun, whose Discovery Plus documentary, The Lost Lincoln, looks at what could be the unknown deathbed photo of President Lincoln. And just a little bit more to it, Dr. Braun, is that Ane, I showed that picture to her. I sent it to her. She didn't watch the documentary. I just showed her the picture. And before I could even say anything, she goes, yes, that's Lincoln. She's being told it's Lincoln. Once again, I know that these are not, these are not definitive, like people who want to buy it is going to use this as solid providence. But it's really interesting that everything that, on the metaphysical side that we've done just on our end, just to see, everything points to, everyone agrees that this is President Lincoln. And it's so interesting. Real fast, because we only have about 6 minutes left in the show. When it comes to the memoriam photographs and the idea of that, it just seems like, because I know that Dr. Stanley Burns was talking about the memoriam photographs, but to me, it doesn't seem like that's what this is. This is just a way to make to document history, because it is so raw, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a traditional memento mori. Memento moris were typically posed in a particular fashion. One of the things that's interesting is that and forgive me because I don't even remember if this made it to the final cut, but there's kind of an imagery that we're used to seeing where when people are posed in their death, we typically lay the hands flat across the chest. You kind of see this like in an old vampire movie, like Dracula comes out of the coffin with his hands.
Or flat. How I sleep at night. Yes.
Yes, exactly. That's actually how I sleep after I paint my nails because I don't want to get the thread count of my sheets pressed into the polish.
When I crawl into my coffin. Yeah.
Yeah, and so the fact that in our image you've got the clenched hand is interesting because A, that's kind of abnormal because you usually would have seen the hands kind of arranged in the flat position, which is very typical of how you would present the deceased. But also it's kind of telling of the type of injury he had. Like when we talked to Dr. Murray and then Dr. Omalu, they both said that the clenched hand is consistent with an injury to the medulla oblongata, which is exactly the type of injury that Lincoln suffered from the bullet. And so, there is a candid kind of in the moment sort of snapshot in time that quality to this image that you don't get right with a state photo that is taken of a deceased leader, that is very staged and yet there is clearly some staging in this image. He's clearly kind of placed in a position to optimize his appearance. But this is a kind of standalone image that does not fit into the categories of kind of traditional memento mori or traditional just, portrait of a living person. This isn't that.
And
so it's really special.
And it is in the cut. talking about the clenched hands and whatnot. And also we don't even talk about, because I did share to some of the Facebook pages, the photo itself. And I don't know if anyone really wonders, like there isn't an exit wound, but you handle that. You take that on also, and you have your dad that actually helps you to prove why there isn't an exit wound on the president's skull.
Yeah, I mean, and even if we hadn't done that ballistic test, Lincoln's body toured the country. They took him on
That's
a grand train ride. Yeah, and no one ever reported his face looking disfigured.
Right.
So there wasn't an exit wound. So even if we, but this brings us back to the interesting point is that the issue of belief, right? What will people believe?
Mm-hmm.
And I can talk myself blue in the face. I can present all the evidence, and there are people who are just never going to believe that this picture is of Lincoln, and I have just had to make peace with that because there are people that will just say that's not the Lincoln that I recognize, right? That's not the august figure I recognize from the $5 bill or the every painting in every second grade classroom in America, and that's okay, that's okay. But the science and the research, I think, speaks enough to the case that I can't fight it. I can just present the evidence and then say, hey, everybody, you make your own call.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's the thing that I find, you're right. I mean, people have their own ideas about it. I mean, the thing is when you watch it, and as I mentioned before, you got to watch the documentary because there's a full picture being painted here. We've been focusing on the history with a little bit of the other stuff in between. But when you have your expert that has the deathbed image and one of the last pictures of Lincoln on screen together, one that's a good look of his face, and they're pointing out the distinct characteristics that really only Lincoln had, and there's some very rare pieces to it. It's very compelling, I think.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this is either Lincoln, right? This is either a picture of Lincoln taken after he was shot, or this is the weirdest coincidence in history to have an 1860s amber type depicting a man that had similar moles and scars who would have died in a fashion similar to Lincoln by a gunshot wound or some form of injury to the back of the head, who then passed this image into the hands of the descendants of Lincoln's family. So there is, right, like, if it's not Lincoln, then it is the most absurd, bizarre, coincidental set of circumstances for the last 150 plus years that I cannot provide an alternate explanation for. But that being said, can I prove, and I'm going to come back and sound like a broken record here, can I prove that this is Lincoln? No, but I cannot prove it is not.
Absolutely. Dr. Whitney Braun is American bioethicist, professor, investigative researcher, and documentary filmmaker who has been featured on the Discovery Channel as the host and executive producer of Undiscovered, The Lost Lincoln. You can stream that now on Discovery Plus. Please check it out because we're only talking about a sliver of the work that Dr. Braun and her team had done to kind of give us a compelling case for this photo of Lincoln. Dr. Braun, thank you very much for coming on the show today. This has been great.
Oh, my pleasure.
My
pleasure. Thanks so much.
We could talk. If this was a 4-hour show, I think we could just fill it up, quite honestly.
it's a great pleasure. Thank you so much for thinking of me.
Thank you. And thank you for running the show, Patrick. Really appreciate it. This has been Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. We'll be back next week with Anne in studio. Take care, everyone.